Hey, you're listening to the Smoked Meat Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Pittman. Smoked Meat is brought to you today by Joe's Underground at the corner of 8th and Broad in Augusta, Georgia, in the bottom of the Lamar Building. Such a great place to go. You meet new friends, you hang out with your old ones, you have a snack, you have a drink, you just have a good time in general. I've been known to have some live entertainment in there, especially one of your favorite comedians, and that would be me. I consider it my home club because they make me feel like I'm at home every time I'm there. And they'll do the same for you. That's Joe's Underground at the corner of 8th and Broad in Augusta, Georgia, in the bottom of the Lamar Building. Remember, I goes to Joe's and so should you. Today, my guest is Charlie Hoxie. Charlie is such a great guy. I had such a ball with him. He produced a film called The Grand Unified Theory of Howard Bloom. If you haven't seen this movie yet, you need to see it today. It's available on Amazon. Oh, man, it's just... I can't even describe it. It's so wonderful. And we had a great time talking about it, and you're going to get to have a great time listening to it. So go on ahead and kick off here on Smoked Meat. Hey, how you doing today, Charlie?
Hey, I'm fine. Good to talk to you.
Outstanding, man. Outstanding. Been looking forward to this. You know, done some homework, done a little bit of reading. And I know you've got a new movie out. Well, it's especially new on digital right now. You know, The Grand Unified Theory of Howard Bloom.
Yeah. It's been about we started fall of 2016, so just over 3 years in the making. So it's been a long journey, and now it's out there for the world to see.
Yeah, and Howard, man, I've had him on my show, and that is the most interesting cat that I have met in a long time. If you can't get, you know, Howard to say something, you have done something, because that man is amazing.
They definitely broke the mold with Howard Bloom, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and you know, how do you get involved with Howard? How do you get involved with his project?
So Howard, as you learn a little bit about in the film, one of his kind of the life's work is a book that he may or may not ever get around to finishing, but it's called The Grand Unified Theory of Everything in the Universe, including the human soul. And try to make a long story short, this book, as you see in the film, at present exists as like a 700-page table of contents, which is as bizarre as it sounds. I mean, it's basically just an endless list of chapter ideas that he would like to flesh out sometime and just show, you know, connect all of the branches of different sciences that he's ever studied and unify them all together in this work. And where I came into the picture is that he also had a TV version that he wanted to make, still wants to make, that, you know, in his proposal would be a 77-part series, so a 77-hour series. I work at this media company in Brooklyn, and the pitch for the TV version found its way to my boss's desk. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what roped our organization into it, and eventually kind of found its way to me. That was kind of the initial genesis.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, Howard is such an interesting guy. I mean, when you say he's got all these theories, he does. And I mean, every one of them makes sense. That's the weird part.
Yeah.
And you think of a guy like this, you don't think of him as being the guy that got sticks to be mainstream. You know, you don't think of him as being the publicist for freaking Michael Jackson and everybody. It's like,
right.
Okay, one or the other, but he is so rounded. I mean, I can't even describe him.
I mean, and like, as you say, it's like, how is it that one person does all of this, you know, writes books on evolutionary biology and but also, you know, was the, like a legendary publicist who worked with Prince and Michael Jackson and Bob Marley. And, you know, he is just a genius, and he's applied his genius to many different fields.
Yeah, and you know, and the one thing a lot of people don't know about him, you know, the chronic fatigue syndrome, that's a real thing, and it's debilitating, yet he just pushes on.
Yeah, yeah, no, that was, so, you know, I first got the chance to meet Howard. You know, he, this pitch that I mentioned that like, made its way to my boss, like around the summertime, 2016. And, we did a little filming, or my organization did some filming with him. I wasn't involved with the project at that point. Where they just kind of invited him in and interviewed him in our studio and let him riff about some of his ideas. And then it was that fall, 2016, I just, you know, I became very interested in Howard's big picture type thinking, and really, you know, I, another way of, telling about is I was a geology major in college. Mm-hmm. So kind of this big picture thinking, like large view of science of really, you know, learning about how our lives and just the existence of, you know, the human species and life in general on Earth, kind of how all these things fit into the bigger picture of existence and as we know it, and the cosmos and the universe and all of that. And so anyways, you know, that all greatly piqued my interest. And then just a little bit that I knew about Howard the man and how he lived his life. But yeah, when we met, finally met in November 2016, and learned about the chronic fatigue and, you know, being bedridden for over 15 years, not leaving his apartment, and basically, you know, had to leave his PR career, which, you know, he had kind of built himself up to be quite a legend in the field, and turned away from all of that. But in the process, eventually found his way to his original love of science and writing, and had this rebirth as a science author. So, you know, what struck me from the beginning was how he viewed that as a blessing, you know, his chronic fatigue syndrome. Because without that, he never would have been able to kind of return to his true passion, his true calling of wanting to write these books that had, you know, been in his head trying to get out for, you know, since he was quite young.
Yeah.
So, you know, from that first meeting, there was one phrase that he said, which really stuck in my mind. And for a little while, I thought about trying to call the film this, but surf the catastrophe. That's kind of like how you can sum up Howard's philosophy.
Yeah. You know, if I had to visualize the book when it's finally finished, if it ever is, because if I know Howard, I mean, there's no end, none at all.
Yeah.
You've seen the artists that'll get on stage and they'll have music going and they're just, mm-hmm. they've got a canvas and they're just, it looks like they're just splattering paint everywhere. And then all of a sudden it's mm-hmm. over and they flip the picture upside down and it's just, mm-hmm. just beautiful portrait.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's how this book's going to be.
Yeah. You know, that's funny because that reminds me of something that Howard once said to me in an interview that didn't make it into the film, but, he likened all of his books and his, you know, kind of collected bibliography and life's work as, you know, tiles of a mosaic.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at the individual tile, it doesn't look like much. And he's also described this, you know, grand unified theory of everything as the skeleton key to, you know, understanding all of his books.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think it also makes me think of another line, which actually is in the film, where he talks about how for him the end game is infinite. Mm-hmm. You know, so for him it's not so much finishing this thing, it's just he's so passionate about exploring these ideas and theories and trying to get them down that it, you know, it's enough to kind of just occupy him forever. And he, you know, if he had 5 more lifetimes, I don't know that he would actually finish this thing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, you know. And that's what makes him so great, you know, is he's basically, when you talk about the mosaic, I think if the mosaic ever comes to pass, it's going to be a picture of that fro that he had. That's my mm-hmm. thing. Because that was phenomenal. But, you know, it's neat that he's able to get these ideas out finally and do that. But it must also be torture to know that there are so many in there and he can't get them all out right now.
Yeah.
You know. And
Yeah. I mean, he's doing his best. You know, I mean, he's like, he basically wrote and published, well, when I first started filming with him, he was in the process of getting like 2 books published. One that I think he'd written a long time ago, but had revised slightly, the Muhammad Code. Mm-hmm. And then another book, which I think he had started, but then had recently finished, How I Accidentally Started the 60s.
Yeah.
And then we filmed, and towards the end of the filming, he wrote his latest book, Einstein, Michael Jackson, and Me. You know, over the course of just a few months, he just really cranked it out.
Yeah.
And now that's out as well. So he's racing against time for sure, but he's doing his best.
Yeah, and you know, for anybody that doesn't understand, as quickly as he writes, especially as deep as he writes.
Yeah.
That's a gift. I mean, I started writing a book about 25 years ago, mm-hmm. and it's little short stories, kind of like, you remember a writer who wrote for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution named Louis Grizzard. Mm. He just did little short things, you know, about a little slice of life back in his past, mm-hmm. growing up in the South. Mm-hmm. Well, mine is kind of the same thing. It's called Put Your Teeth in, Daddy, the Preacher's Coming. And the original chapters are actually on a 3.5-inch floppy. That's how long I've been doing this thing. Uh-huh. And I have no discipline, as you can tell, none at all. And if Howard got the idea to do this book, he could probably do it while he was eating a roast beef sandwich and have three
yeah.
volumes of it. And that's
well, yeah,
a gift.
I mean, his kind of work ethic is very inspirational, and I think, you know, you're not alone, and I think all of us have little projects that we kind of chink away on when we have time, but you know, we also have families and jobs and kind of other pursuits that keep us from that, whereas Howard has just really, you know, formulated this life for himself. And this was, again, part of what CFS kind of forced him to do. You know, he worked out this very precise routine to maximize, you know, the usage of what little energy he had every day. And, you know, he eventually had got more and more energy and was actually able to pretty much fully overcome the CFS. But he still has that just pretty nuts routine, and just every minute of the day is planned out. And because he, you know, gets so much joy out of his work, he's pretty much maximizes his day for, you know, just long uninterrupted hours to devote to, you know, whatever project he happens to have going on at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, just even watching the trailer of the movie, I mean, the people who, you know, talk about this cat, you know, Joan Jett, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, who does Joan Jett talk about? You know, she is rock royalty.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, it's just, damn.
Yeah. Yeah, that was exciting to get her. I mean, you know, I'm kind of, this is my first feature-length documentary, and, you know, so I'm kind of no one. It's a challenge just to get any of the rock stars that he worked with to just return my emails. At one point, we kind of had some inroads with John Mellencamp as well. Mm-hmm. They ultimately said that he, you know, couldn't fit an interview into his schedule, which was unfortunate. But yeah, Joan Jett, I mean, Joan and Kenny Laguna, who is her longtime manager, producer, partner. The two of them both have, you know, deep love for Howard. And as they say in the film, you know, when Joan was in the Runaways, mm-hmm. which was L.A. based, and then she left the band and moved to New York, relocated to New York. So she, in a way, she was kind of starting from scratch. But Howard, you know, part of Howard's talent was just being able to identify really this true talent, and true talent in the sense of talent that sprang up from, you know, an intense soul. Mm-hmm. You know, Howard was kind of, he called himself kind of a shaman for divining the souls of these rock stars that he worked with. So he saw that in Joan. He saw this authenticity and just this unique energy. And he took her on as a client for free for the first year that he worked for her. He deferred all the payments for the first year. So, you know, that obviously stuck with them, and he did great work for Joan and Kenny. And so, you know, luckily they were still remembered all of that, you know, 30 years later, and were willing to sit down for an interview with us.
Yeah. That's freaking awesome, man. And you know, you've done some other stuff too. I know you got into Sundance not once but twice, which is amazing in itself.
Actually just once, but you know, maybe your research came from the future. Maybe you you know, someday there'll be a second, I'm sure. But
I thought it was twice. Oh.
I've had some other things that have gone elsewhere, but yeah, Sundance was just once.
Mm-hmm. Well, hell, that's still something amazing, because that's not really easy to get into. Easy to submit to, but not to get into.
yeah, that was wild. That was back around the same time, actually. So right when I met Howard and started filming with Howard, that was the fall of 2016, and I had been working on a project with a friend, kind of off and on for the previous year. It was a friend of mine who had shot some incredible footage in Ethiopia of this man who every night goes to the outskirts of town in this city in eastern Ethiopia called Harar. And he feeds wild hyenas strips of camel meat, and he's been doing this for years, and he was very close with the hyenas, and he pets them and, you know, feeds them the meat out of his mouth, and just, they're these giant creatures that could rip him to shreds. So it's pretty stunning footage. And so she had this footage, and she also had recorded a poem by a local poet in the local dialect about love and kind of desperate love. And so we made something kind of weird or different. You know, we just, there wasn't really any contextual information about the man. And I mean, there's a bigger story to it, which is quite interesting, that, you know, there's a legend that there was a big famine many years ago, and you know, the famine was so great that people were starving, and hyenas were starving as well, and they actually came into the city and, you know, started attacking and eating people. So a tradition started of leaving food out for the hyenas. You know, even if people were starving, you want to, whatever food you have, at least give it to the hyenas so they don't come eat you. And so this tradition was carried on, and so that's what this man was doing, essentially, kind of carrying on that tradition. So, you know, that information, though, you can find online, or there's like articles written about it, but we created something different that was really just kind of focusing on the emotion and the bond between this man and the hyenas. So it was really just, it was the footage and presented it in black and white and with this poem and with a really ethereal kind of ambient electronic soundtrack that a couple of friends of mine came up with. Mm-hmm. And it was a big lesson in, you know, we were very excited about it, and it definitely felt like one of the weirder things that I had made. I remember like showing it to my parents, and they were all freaked out. And I think, I don't know, I've come to learn that if my parents like don't like something, that's actually maybe a good sign.
Yeah.
It taught me, I think, that the material that Sundance and probably other top festivals are interested in are really, you know, the boundary pushing, risk taking, really out of the ordinary type stuff. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Yeah, you know, I love films. I love, you know, any, because it's an escape for me. You know, it's a good way to, you know, for 2 hours, I don't have to think about something. I don't have to think about this bill's due or this happened at work. You know, I'm concentrating on that. And for me, a filmmaker is giving us all a gift when you do that, because that's hard to do, especially now. And I can escape.
Yeah.
And that's such a great gift. And I want to thank you for that, because that's beautiful.
Yeah, no, thank you for saying that. I think that's definitely the goal of a filmmaker. And it's, you know, you don't always get there. You need the viewer to really trust you and to be able to, you know, like lose themselves in the world that you're trying to put them in. And really, you know, that's funny you say that too, because I, you know, as I went along with the Howard Bloom film, it was, you know, as you can imagine, it was quite a challenge to figure out, okay, what's the way into this story? You know, there's so many facets to it, and what do I focus on, and what's the thread that's going to kind of keep it all together? And so I kind of went through many ideas on that front of just for my own sake of how to frame it and how to approach what I was doing with, you know, this footage that I had gathered. And one way of looking at it that I think was helpful along the way is that, you know, I had the fortune of taking these walks with Howard, and, you know, Howard, he takes a walk through Prospect Park in Brooklyn every day at 4 p.m. And because he's, you know, trying to maximize his efficiency every day, he oftentimes, you know, that's when he does his meetings, and he, you know, invites people to take a walk with him, or he calls them on the phone while he's walking. And it's, you know, as you experienced through doing an interview with him, it's quite a trip. And
yeah,
the conversation can just go from, you know, quantum physics to, you know, human evolution, cultural evolution, to space, and just all points in between. And so at the end of the day, you know, the film, there's a lot in there, and there's a lot of ideas, and there's obviously, you know, there's a lot to cover when you're trying to present somebody like Howard. But at the end of the day, I was just thinking, you know, this film, it ended up being 67 minutes. And if I can just with this film, at least kind of replicate the experience of taking one of those walks with Howard and just getting in his mind for a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of one measure of success for me.
Yeah, and you know, I've not had the pleasure of getting a walk with him, but like I say, doing the interview, you know, he lets you in. If he's going to talk to you, he's going to let you in. And it is such a, to walk around in his head for 30 minutes, you would come out such a changed person.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be like the biggest museum in the world with everything in it.
Oh yeah. He's as you said, you know, he's trying to be the world's biggest, data processing device, you know, so he's just constantly just voraciously consuming knowledge and is able to actually retain it and connect it and spit it back out.
I just now thought of a nice nickname for Howard. I think next time I talk to him, I'm going to tell him that I want to start calling him Johnny Five. Yep.
I don't know if he watches, you know, cultural movies like that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure if he understood the reference, he would greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, I think so, because I believe he could read a matchbook and 20 years later be able to tell you everything about it.
Yeah.
And analyze it for you. And that is awesome.
Yeah.
But you know.
Yeah, he's
yeah, you know, coming up and starting doing these films and kind of getting your feet into the festivals and, you know, getting the privilege to deal with Charlie and, not Charlie, you're Charlie, I'm dealing with Charlie, dealing with Howard. And you know, the people that you talk to in this film, you know, what kind of advice would you give somebody that's just wanting to become a filmmaker or just starting out as a filmmaker, you know?
Oh man. Well, first of all, if you're planning on making a lot of money, you should probably reassess your goals immediately.
Yeah.
But in terms of just, you know, if somebody wants to make a documentary or a film, I mean, I think, well, not to bring everything back to Howard, but one of the themes in the film is really realizing your own unique, authentic passion, which is something that, you know, Howard used to preach to the rock stars he worked with, and something he did for himself and something he now kind of preaches to everyone. But I think that's like what really stuck with me, from, you know, all of his ideas and, theories. To me, that was really the connective tissue for, I think the most special idea of his, which is that's what really drives the universe and drives any great work. So, you know, as it pertains to filmmaking, it's like any art, you can't fake it, you know? So if you want to make a documentary about, you know, X topic, you really, you know, it starts and ends with the passion and interest in that topic. And that really drives everything else. And and then on a practical level, just keep making stuff. Just keep making stuff. That's the only way to get good. Mm-hmm. Again, like any art form, really. Just be totally okay with the fact that, like, the first 10 to 20 to maybe 100 films or pieces or projects you make will probably be crap and, you know, probably of interest to just you and a handful of other people. But, you know, push through that and have a commitment to making something great and improving with each new project that you attempt. Mm-hmm. And just try and get a little bit better and challenge yourself and, and just keep at it.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I know when I started this show, You know, I didn't quite know how everything worked. I thought, okay, I'll get a couple on the board, and you know, I'll have sponsors then. And it was about, you know, doing what I want to do, but it was also about, I'm going to make money doing this. You know, everybody knows the Joe Rogan numbers.
Right. I mean,
by the way, if you know anybody with a spare $100 million that wants to pay me to just be on their network, give them the number.
Okay.
And but you know, I've learned over time that I don't care if I make money off of this. You know, my equipment's paid for. I've got one sponsor, and he's the guy that bought my first set of equipment. And I mentioned him at the beginning of every show because they believed in me from the beginning. And, you know, I just want to have fun with this, and I want it to be a piece of me, not the, you know, like we talked about earlier, I don't want to be the radio voice. And I think that's working. And as I grow with this, you know, more people are listening. And it's funny because my analytics right now are really messed up. You know, it's showing that I've got 4 hits in the last 2 weeks, which I know is wrong because, hell, I've listened more than 4 times. But, you know, it's the way it goes. You know, some people say you live and die by the numbers. I've learned to quit paying attention to them.
Yeah.
And today I found out, like I say, I'm on the Apple charts now. I think it was 152, and that's cool. So I know my analytics are not updating right, but you know, it's about, you know, if I can get one person that wants to listen to this and I can help them escape for an hour, then I've done good.
You know, yeah.
If you're in the car,
you know,
go ahead.
It is important too, though, to like, you know, build on what I was saying. It's just the passion alone might run out at a certain point if you feel like, you know, if you're not reaching anyone. And I think at a certain point, it is important to know that, that people are connecting with what you're putting out there. And that definitely helps kind of fan the flames of the passion.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and it's neat because I've got a friend of mine who, I mean, everybody that knows me knows I do the show. I don't know how many of them actually listen because we don't talk about it a lot. But a friend of mine actually made me a nice wooden sign for my studio down here. It says Smoked Meat. He does woodworking. And I found out he listens in the morning when he drinks his coffee. He turns on one of my shows. And that is so cool.
Yeah.
You know, I was on Facebook in a group that I'm in, and somebody that has a hunting show out of Idaho, you know, was asking, I need somebody that's a paramedic or a doctor to come on the show about first aid. So I sent him a message, and we started talking back and forth, and he's like, do you have a problem with hunting? I said, no, not a bit. You know, and explained the deal with me and my smoked meats and all that stuff and hunting. And I said, I do a podcast called Smoked Meat. And he's like, you're kidding. I'm like, no, he said, I listened to that. I started listening to an episode you did called Hunting for the Cure. And I listen all the time now. And I'm like, really? You know, and it's neat to hear things like that because, you know, I know it's a worldwide medium, but you just don't think of some guy that you don't know in Idaho listening to you and waiting for the next episode. That's really neat.
Well, yeah, man. And we live in this age now of just utter saturation of the media landscape. And, to be able to break through, to be able to actually connect with, you know, that person that would actually get that benefit from, you know, listening to your product. It's like, it's almost like just a miracle at this point. But it's great when it happens.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Charlie, I tell you, man, I've had a ball on here today with you.
And likewise.
I want everybody to go on Amazon and get the Grand Unified Theory of Howard Bloom.
Yeah. And leave a 5-star review for me.
Definitely. Definitely. And then, like I say, you're welcome here anytime. And anytime you need to promote something, call and say, hey, fat boy, I want to talk. And I will hit the button. You've seen how fast I can plug in and go.
For sure, Brad. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
And, wish you continued success.
Thank you so much. And right back at you, man, because I see big things coming.
Thank you.
Yep.